Chapter 16. When you get right down to it, all hospitals tend to look pretty much the same. But Mercy Hospital, where the victims in the attack had been taken, somehow managed to avoid the worst of the sterile, disinfected, quietly desperate quality of many others. It was the oldest hospital in Chicago. The Sisters of Mercy had founded the place, and it remained a Catholic institution. The hospital was thought ridiculously large when it was first built, but the famous Chicago fires of the late 19th century filled Mercy to capacity. Doctors were able to handle 6 or 7 times as many patients as any other hospital during the emergency, and everyone stopped complaining about how uselessly big the place was. There was a cop on guard in the hallway outside the victims' rooms in case the wacko costumed killer came after them again. He might also be there to discourage the press. Whenever they inevitably smelled the blood in the water and showed up for the frenzy, it did not surprise me much at all to see that the cop on guard was Rawlins. He was unshaven and still had his SplatterCon name tag on. One of his forearms was bound up in neatly taped white bandages. But other than that, he looked surprisingly alert for someone who had been injured and then worked all through the night. Or maybe his weathered features just took such things in stride.
Dresden,
Rawlins said from his seat. He dragged a chair to the hall's intersection. He was dedicated, not insane.
You look better, except those bruises. The best ones always show up the day after, I said.
God's truth, he agreed. Murphy looked back and forth between us.
I guess you'll work with anybody, Harry.
Shoot, Rawlins drawled, smiling. Is that little Carrie Murphy I hear down there? I didn't bring my opera glasses to work today.
She grinned back.
What are you doing down here? Couldn't they find a real cop to watch the hall?
He snorted, stuck his legs out, and crossed his ankles. I noted that for all of his indolent posture, his holstered weapon was clear and near his right hand. He regarded Mouse with pursed lips and said,
Don't think dogs are allowed in here.
He's a police dog, I told him. Rawlins casually offered Mouse the back of one hand. Mouse sniffed it politely and his tail thumped against my legs.
Rawlins drawled. Don't think I've seen him around the station.
The dog's with me, I said. The wizard's with me, Murphy said.
Makes him a police dog, all right,
Rawlins agreed. He jerked his head down the hall. Miss Marcilla is down that way. They got Pell and Miss Becton in ICU. The boy they brought in didn't make it. Murphy grimaced.
Thanks, Rawlins.
You're welcome, little girl, Rawlins said, his deep voice grandfatherly.
Murphy gave him a brief glare, and we went down the hall to visit the first of the victims. It was a single bedroom. Molly was there, in a chair beside the bed, where she had evidently been asleep while mostly sitting up. By the time I got in the room and shut the door, she was looking around blearily and mopping at the corner of her mouth with her sleeve. In the bed beside her was Rosie, small and pale. Molly touched the girl's arm and gently roused her. Rosie looked up at us and blinked a few times.
Good morning, Murphy said. I hope you're able to get some rest.
A little,
the girl said, her voice raspy. She looked around, but Molly was already passing her a glass of water with a straw in it. Rosie sipped and then laid her head tiredly back, then murmured a thank you to Molly.
A little,
she said again, her voice stronger.
Who are you?
My name is Karen Murphy. I'm a detective for the Chicago Police Department. She gestured at me and took a pen and a small notebook from her hip pocket. This is Harry Dresden. He's working with us on the case. Do you mind if he's here? Rosie licked her lips and shook her head. Her uninjured hand moved fitfully, stroking over the bandages on the opposite forearm in nervous motions. Murphy engaged the girl in quiet conversation.
What are you doing here?
Molly asked me in a half whisper.
Looking into things, I replied as quietly. There's something spooky going on.
Molly chewed on her lip.
You're sure?
Definitely, I said. Don't worry, I'll find whatever hurt your friend.
Friends, Molly said, emphasizing the plural. Have you heard anything about Ken, Rosie's boyfriend? No one will tell us anything.
He the kid that they took from the scene? Molly nodded anxiously.
Yes. I glanced at Murphy's back and didn't say anything. Molly got it. Her face went white and she whispered,
"Oh God, she'll be so..."
She folded her arms and shook her head several times. Then she said, "I've got to..." She looked around and in a louder voice said, "I'm dying for coffee. Anyone else need some?" Nobody did. Molly picked up her purse and turned around to walk for the door. In doing so, she brushed within a foot or two of Mouse. Instead of growling, though, Mouse leaned his head affectionately against her leg as she went by and cadged a few ear scratches from the girl before she left. I frowned at Mouse after Molly had gone. "Are you going bipolar on me?" He settled down again immediately. Murphy went on asking Rosie fairly predictable questions about the attack. The clock was running. I pushed the question about Mouse's odd behavior aside for the moment and let Mouse watch the door while I reached for my sight. It was a slight effort of concentration to push away the concerns of the material world, like aches and pains and bruises and why my dog was growling at Molly, and then the mere light and shadow and color of the everyday world dissolved into the riot of flowing energy and currents of light and power that lay beneath the surface.